Jay Mariotti here, and America's opioid epidemic has spilled tragically into sports, if also criminally, in the explosive case of the late Tyler Skaggs. The Los Angeles Angels and Major League Baseball could be held liable for millions of dollars after it was ruled that Skaggs did die from an accidental overdose, and obviously a wrongful death scandal is about the last thing a fading, troubled sport needs right now, with the 27-year-old pitcher looking at a hefty payday as a productive starter. But think about this. Why would sports be any different than real life, with Prince dying 3 years ago in what was ruled an accidental overdose of fentanyl? Same with Tom Petty a year ago. Tiger Woods could have died while driving in Florida with a cocktail of opioids in his system. Skaggs did die an opioid death from fentanyl and oxycodone mixed with copious amounts of alcohol. And let me remind you that fentanyl, developed several decades ago as a last chance painkiller, has surpassed heroin and prescription drugs to become the very scourge of the opioid crisis and the leading cause of overdose deaths in this country. The lack of oversight on a road trip does not bode well for the Angels' general manager, Billy Epler, who had no explanation.
So, obviously, there was a report that that came out today, that surfaced today. I can just say that we were saddened by that report that came out and completely heartbroken. Everyone's searching for facts, and everyone within the organization wants facts, which is why we are actively cooperating with an investigation. I think it kind of goes without saying that I cannot comment more on the situation until the police conclude their investigation. But what I can say is it's hard to find the words just how difficult the last couple months have been on everybody within this organization, whether you're in that clubhouse or whether you work in another area. And I talked about Tyler's impact a couple months back and how a lot of people in the organization felt connected with him that don't dress every day in that locker room. But we miss Tyler every day.
All of which leads us to wonder, who's the next victim? And are America's sports leagues, never preemptive when it comes to drugs, taking any measures whatsoever to prevent the next tragedy?
Welcome to Unmuted with Jay Mariotti,
the podcast devoted to making sports talk great again.
Few have made more impact in sports media than Jay, and certainly no one has been called more names. Some actually true. He's the fiercely independent lightning rod who has produced massive ratings for ESPN's Around the Horn, made powerful waves as a national and major market talk host, and ruled Chicago as a columnist for 17 years. Unmuted is a topical whirlwind that doesn't stop until all the news is analyzed. So here he is, back from his day job in Hollywood. For the next half hour or so. Or maybe 40 minutes, depending on the Lakers, Raiders, Trump, and Odell Beckham Jr.'s latest mood swing. The one, the only, Jay Mariotti.
More on the Skaggs tragedy in a moment, but first we move to the NFL, where Andrew Luck's retirement is an emotionally charged reminder that football is a death sport and that an increasing number of players will depart early and prioritize their long-term quality of life. Yet, another season is upon us, regardless, the 100th season of NFL football. And as always, the sport's never-ending safety crisis gives way to the legions of gamblers and fantasy players and diehard fans who annually move the meter and keep the buzz crackling despite the league's ongoing existential issues. Legalized gambling only will help push the TV ratings upward, with even more lucrative rights fees deals around the corner. So business is very good right now for the league, in spite of naysayers who insist that football is dying. It's wishful thinking, not reality. Even after the emotionally charged Luck debates in which his critics spoke out rather shamefully. Hello, Doug Gottlieb and Dan Dockage. What is wrong with you people ripping Andrew Luck, the fans who booed Andrew Luck? What is wrong with you? Now, only hours away from the Thursday night opener, the daily debates are about the football season, such as has Jerry Jones created unnecessary disarray by waiting much too long in the holdout of Zeke Elliott, putting even more heat on the endangered Dallas coach Jason Garrett. As usual, isn't it crazy to think this is the Cowboys' year when it's never the Cowboys' year? And who is fitted for a straitjacket first in Oakland, John Gruden or Antonio Brown? Knock on wood if you say Brown, to use a Gruden expression from HBO's Hard Knocks, which created a remix of Old Man Chucky talking about knocking on wood.
Don't do it. These are my toys. These are our toys. These are our friends. Knock on wood if you're with me. Take that son of a with you. Boof! They don't seem to like it. Let's pound the ball right up there. Knock on wood if you're with me, man. All right? That's just good NFL preparation when you're practicing against your own team in shorts. All right? We're going to practice in shorts again. Knock on wood if you're with me. All right? We got to stay hot. We got to keep putting wood on the fire, man. Knock on wood if you're with me, okay? Don't shove sand up a flea's in there. Knock on wood if you're with me. Do not cut your pants. Knock on wood if you're with me. Make sure we're clear on that. Are we, men? You guys like it? You guys love it or like it? It's good stuff. Are you with me, everybody? Knock on wood. Knock on wood if you're with me there, man.
I say the Raiders go 4-12. Knock on wood if you're with me. And are some Miami players seriously thinking about a mutiny after the tanking Dolphins, who could go 0-16, purged veterans Laremy Tunsil, Kiko Alonso, and Kenny Stills, yes, the activist Kenny Stills, gone. With no offensive line to speak of, let's hope sacrificial lamb quarterback Ryan Fitzpatrick has life insurance. And I'm not joking about that. I am well aware that Super Bowl champions can slip right through the cracks, see the Philadelphia Eagles. But this season, I see really only three teams capable of winning it all: New Orleans, Kansas City, and New England. And isn't the smart play in 2019 the Kansas City Chiefs, with Patrick Mahomes getting enough help from a fortified defense and the acquisition of Shady McCoy, who is reunited with Andy Reid and likely revived as a ground gainer, to make the Chiefs the Super Bowl favorites? Remember, the Chiefs were a neutral zone infraction away from winning the AFC, and they got lucky, like it or not, when the league did not suspend game breaker Tyreek Hill, who will be joined by another alleged domestic abuser, Sackmaster Frank Clark, along with difference maker Tyrann Mathieu, on a roster oozing of talent. I think Mahomes is only going to get better there. The Chiefs primed to finally win a Super Bowl for Andy Reid. The Patriots are the number two AFC team, but without Rob Gronkowski and with holes on the defensive front, I don't think they're repeating. And don't be shocked if Tom Brady, a human being, I do believe, suffers an injury at age 42. He's due. I don't want to see him get hurt. Nobody does. But come on. At some point, he's going to get hurt. Elsewhere in the AFC, the Browns do need to suffer some growing pains, and Baker Mayfield will, before they're ready for an AFC title game. But Baker, Odell Beckham Jr., Jarvis Landry, Nick Chubb, and the Browns' offense will be a national subject every week, as will rookie head coach Freddie Kitchens, who may or may not be ready for that pressure. The Steelers are going to be taking a step back without Brown and Le'Veon Bell, but the emergence of gifted rookie linebacker Devin Bush will push Pittsburgh into a wild card, in my opinion, ahead of Baltimore, which does not have the receivers to help Lamar Jackson become a real passer. Luck's retirement opens up the AFC South, but what are the Houston Texans doing exactly? Without a general manager, Coach Bill O'Brien seems to think he's Bill Belichick. But if the good news was getting a much-needed left tackle in Tunsil, who will help in protecting Deshaun Watson after he was sacked a record 62 times, the bad news is that Houston had to give up two number one picks and a number two. And the Texans also have to inherit Stills, the activist who still wants to keep fighting the NFL and fighting Jay-Z and continue the Kaepernick-inspired sideline protests when the rest of the world is pretty much worn out by it all. On top of that, O'Brien basically gave away elite pass rusher Jadeveon Clowney to Seattle because he didn't want to grant Clowney a long-term extension. This is not how you inspire confidence in week one, and O'Brien was left to defend the team's lack of a GM. Why no GM? O'Brien isn't even a top-flight head coach, and you're letting him run the show in the war room?
Sure. I mean, you know, I know there's that because, look, there's 32 teams, and most teams have a GM. Like, I understand that. You know, I really do. But, you know, the fact that we have a team of people is just something that maybe people have to get used to. You know, we have a team of really bright people that work very well together. I think that it's just a group of guys that and women that work very well together to try to come up with the best decisions for the team. I'm not sitting in an office by myself. Chris Olsen's not sitting in an office by himself. Jack Easterby's not sitting in an office by himself. Matt Bazergan's not sitting in an office by himself. We're in a room, and we're debating. We're talking. We've been doing it for a long time over many different things, whether it's how to set the weight room up or how to set the cafeteria up or the locker room or some of the things that went on yesterday. We have a real strong group of people that have a great background, have a championship background in football and other sports, and we feel like, you know, we made really good decisions and had good communication and did the best that we could to improve the team.
Early on in camp.
So with the Texans in disarray and Jacoby Brissett quarterbacking the Colts, I'm going to take a flyer on Jacksonville, a mad leap that the Jags in that division behind Nick Foles end up winning that division title. The Chargers were a title game possibility, but the cause has hurt considerably with injuries to Derwin James and Russell Okung and that ugly contract squabble with running back Melvin Gordon, who is allowed to seek a trade, apparently. Personally, I would have offered him more than $10 million a year, but the Chargers, like the rest of the league, are trying to devalue the running back position, so they're going to, in essence, devalue their Super Bowl chances. So I think the AFC is pretty simple. Chiefs, Patriots get the first round byes. Browns and Jags win the other two divisions. Steelers and Chargers are the wild cards. The NFC is being showcased on opening night in Chicago with a question that seems rather moronic but somehow is true. If the name of the sport is football, why can't the Bears find a foot to kick a ball through the uprights? They aren't the only NFL team with such problems in this era when even extra points aren't gimmies after rule changes. But the Bears have turned every field goal attempt into a civic emergency after the recurring problems last season of Cody Parkey, whose double doink from altogether now 43 yards lost that playoff game and left the city traumatized. Coach Matt Nagy hasn't helped matters by staging a farcical tryout session in which he repeatedly made candidates, every one of them, kick from, yes, 43 yards. The shaky Eddie Pinheiro survived the competition, but I say Eddie loses more than he wins because the minute he misses one in the opener, and he will, nationally televised as that game is, he becomes the most hated guy in Chicago as fans demand yet another change. Here was Nagy, part of a front office that really should be reestablishing normalcy at that position instead of perpetuating disarray and preaching patience with this Pinheiro character.
You know, you said the other night that you don't want to be like a cat chasing its tail where this is one kick, you freak out. But understanding that if he misses a kick or some kicks coming up here, it's going to be big deal.
How do you
manage that?
Yeah, well, so in the end, for all of us, it's about production. So when are those kicks coming? How often are they coming? And he knows that. We're real with him. We're honest with him. If this, you know, but we try not to think of the glass half empty type deal. Like, he's got a really good confidence going about him right now. We as a staff have a really good confidence going about us. We feel good about it. So hopefully it's the arrow up deal where he hits a few early, he gets his confidence going, and before you know it, he's on a nice streak.
And for those who cry sexism when nobody signs U.S. soccer star Carly Lloyd, even after she made a 55-yarder at Eagles camp, now hear this. It's not about gender. If Lloyd made 20 straight kicks at practice in Lake Forest, I think the Bears would sign her. They don't care at this point. Male, female, animal, make the kick, mascot, they'll sign that person, pet. Anybody at this point, fan out of the stands. Carl Sandburg called Chicago the city of big shoulders. I call it the city of bad shanks. As for the Packers, all eyes on the new coach, Matt LaFleur, and his relationship with his demanding Hall of Fame quarterback. When something goes wrong, will Aaron Rodgers' body language take over, as it always does, and turn this into another coaching soap opera? In my first prediction of the year, I say Khalil Mack creates havoc for the Bears, as he often does in primetime moments, and Aaron does make a mistake or two in an offense that does not have weapons beyond Devontae Adams. Bears 24, Packers 16, as rookie back David Montgomery has a big opening night for Chicago. The class of the NFC is New Orleans, heartbroken by bad voodoo the last two postseasons. And while the Saints miss not having a power runner in Mark Ingram, this is where Alvin Kamara, and the fantasy people know this, becomes a superstar. And 40-year-old Drew Brees, 40, plays the efficiency game with frequent big plays from wideout Michael Thomas. The defense better. Two, with Sean Payton taking a flyer on linebacker Alonzo. The Rams need more from Jared Goff in the postseason, and they need this Todd Gurley situation to stop being a situation, which might not be possible with Gurley's knee issues. I say the Rams win the West, but they take a step back, Aaron Donald aside. Watch out for the Eagles, who now have a better running game to accompany Carson Wentz, health permitting. Knock on wood. The Falcons have strengthened their offensive line to protect Matt Ryan, and the Vikings, I think, win the Central, with Kirk Cousins earning his money this year, though Minnesota also has kicking problems. At least the Vikings play in a dome. The Bears do not. December, January, doink, double doink. My top two NFC teams, the Saints and the Rams. The other division winners, Eagles, Vikings, and my wild cards are the Falcons and, I guess, the Bears. Sorry, Jerry Jones, you lose again. And my fearless Super Bowl pick in the very first week of September, I've got the Chiefs 31, the Saints 28, and that game will be in Miami in the renovated Hard Rock Stadium, assuming it survives Hurricane Dorian and other possible storms. And yes, I've got to tell you about this. This actually happened the other night in that stadium. As Mick Jagger was singing the opening lyrics to Gimme Shelter in the Rolling Stones encore, their last concert of their tour, and you know those lyrics. Should I try? Oh, a storm is threatening my very life today. Guess what happened? The skies immediately opened. You had thunder and lightning and pouring down rain. And Mick Jagger, 76 going on 30, kept on singing. And just when it seemed Novak Djokovic and Naomi Osaka were taking over tennis, the U.S. Open happened. Djokovic was roundly booed by the New York crowd when he retired mysteriously down two sets to none to Stan Wawrinka, which could be a massive setback in his historic quest to win the most career Grand Slams. Was Joker faking the severity of a shoulder injury? And what would that say about his place in history, knowing the toughness of the two men he is chasing in the record books, Roger Federer and Rafael Nadal? Here was Djokovic.
I'm not being offended by, you know, mistreated by anybody. I don't really, you know, pay too much attention on that. I like to respect others, and I, you know, hope that others can respect me and my decision. And I'm sorry for the crowd. Obviously, they came to see a full match, and just wasn't to be. That's all it is. I mean, a lot of people didn't know what's happening, so I cannot blame them. And it is what it is.
Just how frustrating it is that this injury, it came up right at this time. You know, otherwise you'd probably be very confident about
it. Yeah, it is frustrating. Very frustrating. I'm obviously not the first nor the last player to get injured and to, you know, withdraw from one of the biggest events in sport, but obviously I just came off the court, so of course it hurts.
And Osaka's emotional roller coaster continued when she was upset by Belinda Bencic, meaning we will not see Naomi's long-awaited rematch against Serena Williams. You remember last year's final when Osaka won her first major amid Serena's epic meltdown and tantrum. Since then, Osaka has won the Australian Open. Then she strangely changed coaches. Why? And then she suffered inexplicable ups and downs. Now she has lost her number one ranking, and it's obvious Osaka should have stuck with her coach, right?
Yeah, I mean, for me, right now I have this feeling of sadness. But I also feel like I've learned so much during this tournament. And honestly, of course I wanted to defend this tournament, but I feel like the steps that I've taken as a person have been much greater than, like, I would imagine at this point. So I hope that I can keep growing, and I know that if I keep working hard, then of course I'll have better results. So.
Naomi, how is that feeling of sadness different than after your losses at Roland Garros and at Wimbledon?
I mean, in Wimbledon, I walked out on you guys. In Roland Garros, I came straight from the match, so I was all, like, gross, and I just wanted to get out of there. So, obviously, as you can see, I took a shower. But yeah, I mean, I feel like I'm more chill now.
Yet, Osaka's loss does not mean Serena is certain to win Grand Slam title number 24 and tie Margaret Court's record. She's breaking down, nearing 38 years of age, with a rolled ankle, her latest physical issue. And while the top four women's seeds are gone, who can tell with Serena? Djokovic's loss means it's likely that Federer and Nadal will meet in the final. How precious will that be? Roger has 20 career slams. Nadal has 18. Djokovic has 16. No, there won't be much riding on Federer and Nadal, would there? Especially when Nadal, the greatest clay court player ever, would be making a major statement about his all-time supremacy if he beats the master on the hard court at Flushing Meadow and wins his number 19. That means it would be Roger 20, Nadal 19, Djokovic 16. See what all of this means? We are operating under the assumption in college football that Clemson and Alabama will meet once again in the national title game. After all, in the last 4 years, the only time they have not met for the title was after the 2017 season when they played in, the semifinals. Such repetitive dominance is not healthy for the sport, unlike, say, March Madness, which allows for Auburn and Texas Tech to break through, or Loyola Chicago and Sister Jean 2 years ago. But the same old will continue in college football until there's an 18 playoff in a few years. So until then, we will look for cracks. So far, there are few. If Trevor Lawrence threw two picks for Clemson in the opener, he redeemed himself by preventing a pick six with a memorable tackle of a Georgia Tech defender, while Travis Etienne made his early Heisman Trophy statement with a career-high 205 yards and 3 touchdowns in what has been a monster career, an ATM career in the NFL in the future. Now, if America only can pronounce his name correctly. Travis is too polite to correct those who say ETN, as I was saying last week, but he says it's ATN, or in his native Louisiana, HN. Soon enough, America might know him simply as the Heisman Trophy frontrunner.
Travis, you like the fact that everybody's kind of watching you in college football, and when they see a performance like this, they'll take even more notice?
I really don't try to worry about who's all watching and things. I try to go out there and play the best for my team and just try to get to 1-0 every week and just be there for my brothers.
But next up on Saturday is Texas A&M, which gave Clemson fits a year ago. And what do we have here? A guarantee from Aggies left guard Jared Hocker? The Aggies are going to play Clemson on the road. He's predicting an upset?
Make them ripe for an upset?
Oh, yes, it does. There will be an upset.
What did you see?
Really looking forward to seeing what he can do for us.
Are you guaranteeing victory?
I mean, I'm pretty confident in my ability and our team's ability, so.
Okay, and if Alabama started slowly against Duke, Tua Tagovailoa caught fire with his magnificent receiver, Jerry Jeudy. But the Crimson Tide, I'm looking for cracks. Remember, will dearly miss star linebacker Dylan Moses, likely out for the season. So maybe, just maybe, there's a possible interloper in Ohio State, whose transfer quarterback Justin Fields was a 5-touchdown revelation in his Columbus debut and ultimately might make Georgia coach Kirby Smart look dumb and rue the day when he made Jake Fromm the starter at the University of Washington. Another Georgia transfer, Jacob Eason, was better than Fromm over the weekend. Fromm throwing for 156 yards at Vanderbilt in a week. Second half for the number 3 Bulldogs. Auburn delivering a rousing comeback win over Oregon that quiets the Hounds, who want Gus Malzahn's hide, with freshman quarterback Bo Nix. Perfect name at Auburn. Bo Jackson, Bo Nix. Securing the win with a touchdown pass with 9 seconds left when the gambling Gus eschewed a field goal. I love that. But the rest of the SEC, yuck. Tennessee loses to Georgia State. It makes Coach Jeremy Pruitt look worse than Butch Jones. South Carolina losing to North Carolina. And Mack Brown, I thought Mack Brown was in the ESPN studio. No, he's back on the sideline. He wins his debut. Ole Miss losing to Memphis. Missouri and Kelly Bryant, the former Clemson quarterback, lose at Wyoming. How do you get to Laramie, Wyoming from Columbia, Missouri? Florida surviving a slop fest against Miami, on and on and on. But the flip side of that is a weak SEC means it's even more likely now that two teams from that conference will be in the playoff. I know you've got Alabama at the top with Georgia. Right behind, you've got LSU and Auburn. But then there's a big decline. And yeah, I would say Alabama, Georgia in the SEC title game. You'd be stupid to say otherwise, okay? Don't make presumptions early on about Georgia's offense. Don't do that. You'll be making a big mistake. So if we're looking at the playoff, really, on September the 2nd, when I tape this, what are we looking at? Alabama, Georgia, Clemson, and you've got Ohio State and Oklahoma dueling for the fourth spot. I hate doing this, but that's what college football forces you to do after every weekend. So how about Jalen Hurts at Oklahoma one-upping Fields in the transfer portal department, accounting for a record-setting 6 TDs in the Sooners' victory over Houston? And yet, Hurts says he's not remotely satisfied. You think he doesn't ache to play Nick Saban, Tua, and the Tide in the football playoff? Wearing number 1, Hurts could become the 3rd straight Oklahoma QB to win the Heisman, joining Mayfield and Kyler Murray. An amazing quarterback whisperer that Lincoln Riley and Norman, and I think Riley should be headed to the NFL soon himself. And the ailing Pac-10 also won't be a national factor again, as Oregon and Justin Herbert choked up the lead to Auburn, while USC lost quarterback JT Daniels for the season with a torn ACL in the Trojans' tight win over Fresno State. This came after the Trojans, in the very first kickoff in the renovated LA Coliseum, had a long kickoff return nullified because two players were wearing number 7. Only 3 months right before Clay Helton is replaced by Urban Meyer. It's going to be another long year in LA with Chip Kelly stealing his $23 million at UCLA, which lost ugly at Cincinnati. First, the NFL figured out Kelly. Now the college game has figured him out. What happened to his hurry-up attack, his innovation, the speed? Chip Kelly should just hand back the money and leave. The hot seat also is cranked up for Willie Taggart after Florida State's collapse against Boise State in Tallahassee, known as the Choke at Doak.
With it, again, we laid an egg in the second half, and things that I preached all offseason, things that we needed to get better with, was finishing, and we didn't do that today. And so we got to get back and look at what we did wrong and correct those things. Our football team got to learn how to finish, you know, and our football team got to learn how to win again. You know, I think that's important too. It's been a while since we won and won big, and our guys got to understand and learn how to do the little things that's going to take us to win second half.
Is it not mind-boggling how this program has nosedived after the national title reigns of Jimbo Fisher and Bobby Bowden? I think Jimbo knew something. Yeah, he took the money at A&M, but he also knew he could not sustain a national title program in Tallahassee. According to a medical examiner's report in Texas, Tyler Skaggs was killed by that opioid combination when he was found unconscious and fully clothed in his hotel room back in July, having choked on his own vomit. But the Skaggs family, in a statement, gave this story a very cryptic turn, claiming the use of drugs and alcohol was, quote, completely out of character, unquote, for Tyler, while adding they were, quote, shocked to learn that it may involve an employee of the Angels, unquote. Whoa! And when the family hired high-powered Texas lawyer Rusty Hardin to investigate how Skaggs, quote, came into possession of these narcotics, including who supplied them, unquote, well, the implication is staggering and alarming. The family thinks somebody on the Angels payroll introduced Skaggs to fentanyl and oxycodone, potent narcotics obviously prohibited by Major League Baseball. If this accusation is proven true, the Angels and Major League Baseball will be on the legal hook for having a drug pusher in the house, and questions will loom very heavy about a possible drug culture within that clubhouse and others in the sport. Beyond the sports world, America is dealing with a lethal crisis in which physicians are enabling addiction and fatalities by overprescribing opioids. Are sports teams also guilty of making dangerous, easily addictive opioids accessible to athletes? I think that's a very fair question in the wake of the Skaggs tragedy. And if we once asked if sports had weed and cocaine problems, have these concerns now reached a more frightening level? And does it stem from a need to feed painkillers to athletes, such as Skaggs in the past? Athletes who have dealt with injuries and are encouraged to perform through pain. A franchise featuring one of baseball's all-time greats, Mike Trout, already faces widespread criticism for reaching the postseason only once during Trout's reign. Now we await news on information provided to police by teammates, trainers, doctors, coaches, and executives. And one question involves a team photo taken on a tarmac at an Orange County airport. You may have seen this, with several players wearing boots, jeans, and cowboy hats for the Western-themed road trip that had been organized by Skaggs. Only hours later in Texas, Skaggs was found dead in the very same brown boots and black denim seen in the photo. Where was he in those hours between the photograph on the tarmac back in California and then when he was found dead on his bed? Only several hours passed. Who was he with? Where was he? How did he get the drugs? The team nickname, again, is Angels. But like so many other tragedies that have ravaged that franchise through time, Skaggs' death is the work of the devil. We need comprehensive answers from MLB Commissioner Rob Manfred, not the usual hemming, hawing, and lack of action and transparency. It's one thing to unethically juice baseballs to feed a disproportionate home run outbreak. It's quite another if the sport has an opioid problem that the owners and Manfred don't want us to know about. Remember those concerns about Justin Verlander's mental state after he first scrum-blocked a Detroit reporter and then was ejected from a game? Well, never mind. Verlander's no-hitter, the third of his career and first since 2011, not only further establishes his first ballot Hall of Fame induction, but reminds us that the Astros, not the injury-riddled and rotation-soft Yankees, and not the bullpen-wobbly Dodgers, are the favorites to win their second World Series in 3 years. The Houston architect, Jeff Luno, is going to be right when he says the Astros will finish the regular season with the best record in the sport. And between an all-time playoff rotation and the best home field advantage in baseball, look it up, why wouldn't the Astros complete the mission? Here was Verlander, one walk short of a perfect game, and now on track for his second Cy Young Award. Cy Young also having thrown three no-hitters.
I mean, I'd be lying if I didn't, if I said I didn't know that the list of guys that thrown three instead of two gets pretty small. Some of the guys I idolize, you know, it's a special moment. I'm so happy to be able to celebrate this with my teammates. Don Kelly was here for the one last time in Toronto. He came up to me and said, "I've seen this before." You know, it's just such an incredible moment and something that you get to celebrate with your teammates, which other than a World Series and winning championships, these team victories like this are few and far between. So I'm going to enjoy this one.
The Astros, known for their algorithms and science, certainly know how to maximize pitching talent as well. Verlander, now 36, has found new life in Houston, so has Kate Upton, and he joins Garrett Cole, Zach Greinke, and Wade Miley in a postseason rotation nobody will touch, not even the Yankees. Here in September, we're starting to see definition for those 10 postseason berths. In the American League, the Astros, Yankees, and another team that must be considered a powerhouse of sorts, the home run dizzy Minnesota Twins, will win their three divisions, while the remarkable Rays just swept the Indians, meaning the Rays and the A's, low budgets, big brains, might just play in the wild card game. And over in the weaker National League, the Dodgers might have the best record, but they're stumbling a bit with questions about closer Kenley Jansen's combustibility, Hyunjin Ryu's workload, and Max Muncy's wrist. Might Ronald Acuna Jr. and the Braves, despite their youth, be ready to challenge the Dodgers? I'd like to see that. Or maybe the post-Bryce Harper Nationals, who have their offensive groove back behind Anthony Rendon, while armed with their own postseason awesome rotation of Max Scherzer, Patrick Corbin, and Steven Strasburg. The Cardinals are steadying their ship atop the NL Central, while the streaky Cubs still look vulnerable, with big money bust Yu Darvish out with forearm tightness. What a bad idea for Theo Epstein, Yu Darvish. If the Cubs were to face Scherzer and the Nats in the wildcard game, Joe Maddon likely will take the hit and lose his job. They're not going to beat Scherzer. And that would be utterly unfair because Epstein and the front office Ivy Leaguers are the screw-ups in this case with their bad moves in recent off seasons. It's not Joe Maddon's fault, but you know it's never their fault, the brainiacs. No. How can you possibly fire a manager who broke a 108-year curse? And David Glass and his family sold the Kansas City Royals to a local ownership group for about $1 billion. And while that sounds like a lot, consider that NBA franchises are the hot ticket right now for billionaire buyers, and those teams are going for considerably more money than MLB teams, with the Miami Marlins sold for less than $1.2 billion in 2017. Check out the recent purchases of NBA teams compared to the Royals and the Marlins. MLB values going backwards. Much like its basic demographic these days, baseball is old and on the wane. With a labor impasse on the horizon, I'm kind of shocked anybody wants any of these franchises. I wouldn't buy the Kansas City Royals with your billion. Has any basketball star lost it all more quickly than DeMarcus Cousins? Once looking at a Supermax deal if he had stayed in Sacramento, Cousins suffered a series of devastating injuries and now has been charged with misdemeanor domestic violence by authorities in his hometown of Mobile, Alabama. Allegedly, Cousins told an ex-girlfriend that he would put a, quote, bullet in your bleeping head, unquote, if she didn't allow their 7-year-old son to attend Cousins' wedding to another woman. Turns out the ex-girlfriend was recording this conversation, and she sold it to, yep, TMZ, before turning it over to police, who issued an arrest warrant. This is a sad story for everybody involved, mostly the 7-year-old boy, and it's another reason the Lakers, for whom Cousins was supposed to fill a hole at center, will not be winning an NBA title. In its World Cup opener, Team USA shook off a slow start to handily beat the Czech Republic in Shanghai. While a couple of dozen elite NBA players bypassed this event, it's a chance for Donovan Mitchell to shine for his country and for Kemba Walker to mesh with his new Boston teammates, Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown. Up next for the Americans, Turkey. If you think this is going to be an easy game, consider Turkey has 3 NBA players, none of them Turkeys, including Sidi Osman and Ersan Ilyasova. I say the U.S., warts and all, still qualifies for the Tokyo Olympics as one of 2 top Western Hemisphere teams. But every game is going to be a challenge, unlike the cakewalks we're used to in recent global competition. Here was Greg Popovich snarling again as he picks on the local media in China and Donovan Mitchell.
Yunbao from Tencent. This question for both of you. It's the first game here in Shanghai. What's your impression of the audience here?
Well, I have to be totally honest with you. The game starts, I don't see or hear anybody except the players and the court. I have no idea how many people were in the stands, how loudly they may or may not have yelled. I honestly have no idea.
I'm a little different.
You're supposed to be paying attention to the game. What the hell? So you're starting trouble on my team.
And Brooklyn Nets forward Wilson Chandler becomes the rare NBA player to be busted for PEDs, suspended for 25 games while claiming he took a substance that only recently was added to the league's prohibited list. Again, for the 10 millionth time, if you're chewing even a piece of gum and you're a multi-million dollar athlete, would you please check the list first and then the ingredients and see if they mesh right? And if Chandler did have a doctor who didn't realize the substance was banned, then stop hiring doctors who are quacks. Quack. Now it's time for The Buzz, our deep dive into sports and life. Chris joins the program. Chris, are baseball and sports being typically slow to address an opioid epidemic that has become a leading killer of Americans, including Tyler Skaggs?
Jay, as they say, sports often will reflect life and reflect society, and we know we have an opioid crisis that affects millions of people every day in this country. It's created a homeless epidemic, as every study that you see says that homelessness is leading to horrible drug addiction, which is opioid-based. It's horribly sad, and it's horribly sad what happened to Tyler Skaggs. I applaud his family for coming out to defend his honor. I just find it hard to believe that he wouldn't have any clue about the combination, the lethal force that was about to take hold on his body with what he was taking. It's horrible, and we're going to continue to see it. This isn't surprising. We know what NFL players have gone through. It's not just a concussion issue. It's been a drug issue forever. They shoot these guys up with everything. They pop them, give them any pills they want to pop, and then when they're no longer in the league, they're drug addicts a lot of times. or their bodies are just beaten down to the point where they don't even bother taking drugs because they're so beaten down. It's really horrible. But no, I'm not surprised that this has happened, and hopefully somebody will wake up. But as we know, I mean, Billy Epworth's statements that we played earlier, they're laughable. I mean, it's just laughable.
And Chris, another football season upon us, and does it amaze you, after all those pronouncements, that the sport is doomed, and you have the recent retirement of Andrew Luck, and all the passion about that topic, that the popularity of this life and death endeavor continues to be very high in this country, with the gamblers and the fantasy players and the diehards all ready to roll once again?
Jay, I think we know the answer. No matter who says that football is not king in this country, just look at this past weekend. College football back in, sports bars across the country, busy, 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 and they're going to heat up Thursday night for Packers-Bears, and of course be packed for the first NFL Sunday. Football is still king. Football is alive and well, for now at least, and I'm sure there's fantasy football and the gamblers are ready as well, Jay.
And Chris, I think you're still a USC fan. I don't blame you if you're not. Mind explaining how on the first play in the impressively renovated Coliseum, how a long kickoff return could be nullified because two Trojan players were wearing the same number 7? Then USC loses JT Daniels to a torn ACL with no legitimate backup quarterback behind him. Chris, is it inevitable that Urban Meyer, whose Fox studio is only a few miles from campus, will be replacing Clay Helton in December?
As a Trojan fan, it was pretty remarkable to watch Clay Helton have that same dopey look. You think somebody could get him help to not have that same dopey look on the sideline every single time the camera finds him. Two number 7s out of the gate for the Trojan season. And by the way, it was a great kickoff return. And then it goes blown back, and he's got that dopey look. JT Daniels goes down. He's got that dopey look on his face. They barely built Fresno State. Had they had a quarterback that could actually play or do more than just a few passes and a few runs, I mean, USC should have lost that game, frankly. Stanford should steamroll them. We'll see. Now Clayton Helton's got to worry about trying to get Jack Sears off the portal list, the transfer portal list. It's a disaster just like it has been since Pete Carroll left year after year. They need to bring in Urban Meyer in, let him change things from a winning mentality, and Lynn Swann as well needs to go, and let Urban Meyer have full control.
Okay, thanks, Chris, which brings us to quickies, which are just that quick. Unlike the baseball blue bloods who are swimming in large revenue streams, the low-budget Oakland A's need every dollar that comes through the turnstiles. Yet the A's, gunning for a wild-card berth despite their dilapidated ballpark, will be allowing, I love this, kids 12 and younger to attend games for free in the month of September. I love it. When an adult buys a ticket, he can bring in two kids gratis. This is smart stuff from the A's, who need bodies in the stands down the stretch, and at the same time need to grow a new generation of fans in a struggling sport. This is in contrast to, say, the Dodgers, who are blacking out game telecasts to 70% of the Southern California market and losing an entire generation of fans in the process. The latest iteration of the XFL is serious about a February launch, revealing nicknames and logos for its 8 franchises. The mission is a reimagined version of professional football. If the latest crackpot league lasts more than, let's say, a few months, then I'm going to say this to founder Vince McMahon. He can body slam me at halftime of a game, okay? If it lasts 2 seasons, body slam me. Ethically and morally, Art Briles failed at Baylor, where he was fired in the wake of a sexual assault scandal. But criminally, Briles was not charged. And in some ways, he was made a scapegoat by the school. So, 3 years later, nobody in Bonham, Texas, seemed to care much that Briles was making his debut as coach of the Mount Vernon High School team. Sometimes life must be allowed to go on, and as long as Briles has learned his lessons about oversight, and he does apply them to his new team of young men, tell me this. What is so wrong about Briles returning to the sideline on a high school field in Texas?
And now a final Mariotti commentary too hot for ESPN, too smart for the internet, and too chill for political activism. Take it away, Jay.
Kobe Bryant will remain competitive to his dying day, but unfortunately that intensity haunts him, such as when he accused Shaquille O'Neal last week of being lazy and out of shape during their Lakers years, with Bryant saying, and I'm quoting, "I wish he was in the gym. I would have had 12 bleeping rings," unquote. To which Shaq responded on social media, quote, "You would have had 12 if you passed the ball more," unquote. So that feud is back 15 years later. And you know what? Yeah, both are right. Shaq wasn't always in the best condition, and Kobe was a ball hog at times. But lingering above all of this like a rare dark cloud over a sun-graced Los Angeles is that Shaq and Kobe did waste an era. The Lakers should have won more than 3 NBA titles before Kobe pushed Shaq out the door and the big man was traded to Miami. And you just knew Shaq would have more to say when a TV show gave him the chance.
I thought that was interesting if you apply that to business. What do you make of that?
Make of what?
His comments on your work ethic.
Whose comments?
Kobe's.
Was he saying that to me or was he saying that to all the statues that I have in front of the Staples Center? Because he wasn't talking to me.
Do you watch what he's doing in your business?
No, of course not. Never. Never. My work ethics, you know, speaks for itself. Good thing about me is I did it my way. My way has been very, very effective on and off the court. And, you know, people have to stay relevant somehow. But we're here talking about positive stuff. Getting people jobs, you know, help getting people extra income. I don't, you know, buy into any of that.
So this coming
3 finals MVPs, 4 rings, not bad for a guy who didn't work out.
Ooh, Kobe has to stay relevant. Another slingshot. And if you think Shaq is joking, he's not. If you've heard him on TNT, you can tell when he's goofing around, but when he's mad at Barkley, he gets real fired up. Shaq is real fired up about this. Look, both of these men, and they are grown men, are highly visible in the media world, with Kobe front and center at the U.S. Open. Both also have Mega Millions, and they also have children who don't want their old men acting like social media trolls. So, gentlemen, please grow up. That's our show. For our producer and editor, Chris, I am Jay, reminding you to never, ever let anybody mute you in life.